Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And tonight is kind of a little unusual. First of all, for tonight only, we are going to have the 55 minutes or so to be together. But as you know, for the last number of months, the station has generously given us quite a bit more time. We've been running an hour and a half show. And next week, we're going to be starting at a different time and have a two-hour show. Now, part of that time will be the time we've been on, but we're actually going to start an hour earlier. So we're going to have a two-hour show starting 1 hour earlier than we have been starting ever since we've been on the air on this station, so on BBS. So for all of you who have been listening, stay listening, and hopefully next week you'll remember to tune in an hour earlier. So to give you some idea of times, if you will start it on the East Coast. If you're on the East Coast, you're going to be starting to listen to us at 9 p.m., and the show will go from 9 till 11. And so for some of you, that might be a improvement because at least you can start listening to the show at an earlier time. And then those in the central time zone, that'll go till 8 and until 10, 8 till 10. And then if you're in the Mountain Standard Time, and, well, actually it would be daylight savings. Now, unless you're in Arizona, Arizona's kind of its own thing. That's where I'm talking from right now. So everybody except in Arizona in Mountain Standard Time, they will be coming into the show from 7 until 9. And then the people on the West Coast and the people in Arizona will be hearing the show from 6 until 8. So that helps, I hope, settle that situation. And also, it's exciting. We've got a full 2 hours now. That's assuming you can handle it. I hope you can handle me for 2 hours. And I will be able to develop things, develop subjects more. We'll be able maybe to have some more callers than we have. And we'll also be able to slow down sometimes, because sometimes I have to speed up a little bit just to squeeze in what I would like to say. And there'll be more variation maybe in what we can offer. So I like all of these ideas, and that is going to start next week from 6 until 8 if you're in Arizona. And then the rest of the time zones for the rest of the people who are listening in. And that's for the U.S. Now, of course, if you're not in the U.S., I can't really deal with that. You just figure it out on your own. You'll be able to do that, I'm sure. Okay. So tonight I thought we'd talk about overcoming common monastic thinking. And what is common monastic? It means that the first kind of thought that a person employs, rather than it be mental thinking, which is what the word monastic means, is actually emotional thought. Emotional thought is really caused by people's feelings and then their creative imagination dominating their, we'll say, logical and conceptual thought. The problem with common monastic thought is it doesn't seek, nor does it usually get to, the truth. And it seldom develops wisdom. So it's a very limited kind of thinking. And very few people actually don't use it some of the time. So it's a problem. And I'm going to explain the nature of that problem, where it came from, and how we can overcome it tonight, all in that short time, because today is the only show that's going to be shorter. But we'll make it work. We'll make it work. And again, if we don't, hey, next week we've got a couple hours, so I've got lots of time. And hopefully by the end of tonight, you'll have a pretty good understanding of how to deal with this. Most people don't know that combinant monastic thought has plagued humanity for a very long time. Each major race of human beings develops a body. The very first race of, we'll say, truly physical human beings, not just etheric in form, but physical as well, were called the Lemurians. Now, some people may not believe that. They might think, oh, there's no proof in history about that. Well, there isn't any proof in history because this is prehistory. And right now, we don't really completely understand all the origins of human beings. We're getting a little closer, though. There's a lot of information about that, but that's for another show. And I've done some shows on that subject. But the Lemurians were very concerned and thought mostly about their physical environment, including the electromagnetic or etheric parts of themselves and the etheric parts of the physical world. So much so that they actually had pretty good etheric senses, and they could actually see and experience in an informative sense their environment much further away than we can, because they could reach into the etheric realm and pick up, you could call it something like TV or and or radio waves from distances far away. These were not real radio waves or TV, but it was in that category, but a different phase. And they could actually see things at a distance and hear things at a much greater distance. And they could experience realms that we are not familiar with any longer. Their attempt was to unify the senses in the physical and etheric bodies. They did not succeed in that, and so their thinking was never completed in those bodies, just as their senses weren't. In order to think, we have to have accurate, informative senses. And most people don't realize that if you don't have any sense, it's almost impossible to have any kind of thought. You can have thought about things you used to sense, but if you never sensed, thought would be a very difficult thing. And you would have only certain levels of abstraction, but nothing concrete because you never sensed anything. So if the senses are not fulfilled, if they aren't completely put together, we have incomplete sense and therefore incomplete thought. That kind of makes sense, right? Sort of a little double entendre there. And so when we look at the Lemurians, they did not have completed sense, therefore their thought was not complete. And this happens as a race of people, race of humanity, develops itself over seven sub-races of development. Either they complete the process of having whole thought, or they don't. Now, one of the problems when you don't have whole thought is you don't understand your creator very well. The senses which are most difficult to develop are the heart and crown senses of the chakras. And those two senses are the senses of our own creator. They are quite difficult to develop, and usually those are the senses that fail to develop. They failed to be developed to some extent in every race so far of physical humanity. So this is a difficult thing for us. And during the Lemurian times, there among spiritually developed people, some of them actually did develop some sense of their creator beyond the rest of the race, and they did pretty well. But the whole race was unable to complete the process 100%, and that means that the failure ends up being that the race doesn't develop the virtues it could have developed. It's an unfortunate thing when it happens. Now, they did it a little, they sort of did it halfway. The sixth sub-race, of Lemurians were pretty good at developing the heart chakra. But the seventh subrace was pretty bad at developing the crown chakra. They actually were pretty evil types of folks because of their failure to overcome the illusion, which is the retained energy in the chakra, caused them to not really see or understand God in a way that they could co-create with. And so while the sixth subrace understood God, they weren't great at co-creating. And the seventh subrace created more darkness than they created goodness. That's an unfortunate outcome from this scenario. Then when we look at the astral body and how it was developed, a whole other race of humans developed that. That body was developed, again, by a non-historically presently accepted race of people, by the general people who accept races. And that general race was called the Atlanteans. Now, you probably have heard of them. But the Atlanteans did pretty good on unifying the five lower senses in the astral body called entity. And that's a good thing. And that gave every human being the ability to be empathic if they so choose and if they had karma already developed in prior lifetimes that didn't prevent it. So that's a good thing. They did a good thing. But again, when it came time to develop the two spiritual senses in the last two races, the sixth and the seventh subraces, I should say, those two subraces were very dark. And neither one used either the spiritual senses of the heart and crown chakra to discover their own creator and to eventually co-create with their co-creator. So they created darkness. And what they did is they left us with a real big problem in that because the split was not just with one of the spiritual senses, but with both of them from the lower form senses, the form senses stayed intact and very strong, giving us a good sense of, we'll say, the physical world as a form world. It also gave us a sense of, we'll call it, strength in believing our own feelings, because that's every sense in an astral sense is a feeling. So people got very strong feelings by unifying the lower five senses within themselves and for other people. But they didn't get a very strong feeling for God. And they didn't get a very strong feeling for wanting to co-create more of God. And this led to a problem. The problem is that the astral body became dominant, even as in the next race, us, the mental race, the people that's recorded. We are the recorded race of people for the most part. We are dominated still by the very strong feelings we have astrally, because the five lower senses of our astral bodies are all unified. It would seem like that's a good thing, but it isn't when you go on to try to develop the mental body, but you don't have a feeling as strong for God as you do for yourself and the physical existence. And that's exactly what we're facing today. This is what produces the kama manasic connection. It produces the effect where the illusions that we have in our astral body, which are called glamours, or we'll call them fixed desires. I like that word, fixed desires. It's another word for glamours. And if you have all these fixed desires that are controlling it, then you use your creative imagination to think with, because it makes you feel better to believe that you're going to get something met in a desire, rather than using monastic thinking to control your thought process. Because the monastic thinking gets to the truth if you really are free from your feelings. And it dispels a lot of the illusion in the astral body. But people don't want to be dispelled when they have desires that are unmet. And so instead of breaking this connection and allowing themselves to think conceptually and logically, getting to love wisdom and truth in their mental body, they create thought first with their creative imagination, seeing their desires being met. That's the only future they see, is the desires being met. And in terms of actual thought itself, the thought they have is mostly about the past and the present. So they don't really have a balance of future time. The desires being met is a fantasy. It's not reality. So you can't call it true thinking. It's just a fantasy. And the fantasy replaces the truth, which is the real outcome of whatever a situation is going to be using conceptual thought and logic. And so people replace that because they don't like the outcomes of their conceptual thought and logic, and they prefer, and it's easier to think with, their creative imagination. And they mostly think in the past and the present, and then have a future fantasy, which in almost every case cannot be realized and is a mistake. So this is a problem, and we got this problem because of prior races. Some of those races were composed of much earlier incarnations of our soul. So we can't blame it on anybody else. You know, you can't play the blame game here as though somebody else in another race caused this problem for us. We were the somebody else's. Many of us were. Not all. Because not everybody was incarnating in those earlier times. But a lot of us are responsible. How do we overcome this? This is a real nasty problem, believe me. I hope you're following me. I'm going as slow as I can, I think. But I can give more examples if necessary. I hope you're following. This is a little difficult because just to understand this, you can't be thinking emotionally. So you have to follow my thought, which is more of a mental thought, to kind of stay up with what I'm trying to explain. So as long as we are contaminated by our fixed desires, or some people call them glamours, we then cannot easily get out of imagining our desires being met rather than seeking truth and helping others to receive truth by us giving wisdom in our thinking, which would be then conceptual and logical in the way it would be expressed. Quite difficult for most people to really grasp what this is, because a lot of people don't have much sense of their mental sense. So it's hard for us to recognize we even have mental senses, and therefore what mental thought really is. And I have to talk in more generalities than specifics, or else I would not probably be fully understood about this subject. So, how do we get ourselves to be, first of all, conceptual and logical, etc.? Well, that's by ensuring that we are using all three parts of time equally and in whole ways. Because you see, the dimension that's added into monastic realms, including monastic thought, is the whole dimension of time. Now, what do I mean by that? I mean that when you compose a concept and then put it into thought forms, which is called logic, and you do it in a way that's complete, you are including a balance between the past part of events, the present events, and then the future of those events, not just as they will exist, but also in how you can communicate them to others so that they're meaningful to those others as they might be to you. This is quite difficult because you've got to hold all this kind of thinking together at the same time in order to accomplish it. It's not necessary to do that in the astral body. In the astral body, you need to only think of the past and the present and just fantasize some future, and then the past and present don't have to be balanced. They're not required to be. But it has no truth to it necessarily. I mean, it is possible an astral thought could be truthful at the same time. But if you're composing it from that angle, and you start and finish with that idea, the chances of it being truthful are almost zero. It would just be luck. And it would be most likely against the very difficult process necessary for someone to discipline themselves so that they achieve this very difficult result, the balancing of three elements of time and holding all the thought necessary together in your mind so that others can benefit as well as yourself. This is the proper way for people who are as mentally developed as we are today to be thinking. Most people, the majority of the time, do not think this way. Some people, sometimes the majority of people, think this way some of the time, but not enough to prevent the very serious problems the common monastic thought produces. What are those problems? It creates estrangement and a kind of non-inclusive, very selfish way of communicating with other people that does not give concepts, usually, that are whole enough for others to have a real understanding of what you're saying or doing. And at the same time, it gives other people more tendency for themselves to be thinking in fixed desires and getting more and more astral by using their creative imagination to come up with ways that they prefer for, in their fantasy, for their future to happen. So people don't even have to have the same futures in the same conversation. They can have very different futures. As a matter of fact, they usually do. So when two people get together and one or both are communicating common monastically, they are thinking in totally different future outcomes, neither which is usually correct. Tell me that that isn't a nonsense situation, and that is going on all around you all the time in your own life and if you observe others as well. So people supposedly are communicating, but they're really not, because the future that they're trying to get somebody to understand about is their own fantasy, and the other person has a different one, and neither one is likely to be correct. Wow. If that doesn't kind of put a wrinkle on things, I don't know what will. I mean, this is that's a serious problem, isn't it? And how do we get out of it? I mean, this is like, we may be talking about one of the main problems that humanity is facing, and we don't even know we have it. And I can tell you that as I go through my day and watch people doing this all over the place, I know that they don't know that they're doing it. I know that the world is getting more and more screwed up, and people are fighting wars, they're having terrible legal issues and you name it, battles, because they're not aware of the differences between what they're thinking and what other people are thinking, nor are they aware that neither are thinking in accurate ways that produce any truth. We live in a very untruthful world, that means. One in which there's a heck of a lot of confusion. Even if we're very close to people, we often don't understand that they don't have the same future we do in mind when about whatever we're talking about. How could you ever get to better communication from that kind of mess? Well, there is an answer. The answer has to do with something I've talked about many times, but this is a little different because this has to do with spiritual discipline. You've heard me say that word, or those words. But this is discipline in two different bodies. The first is to discipline the astral body. Because if you don't shut off some of those glamours, and you don't stop listening to them, and being driven by your fixed desires, the seductive value of them is so great, and the power of them are so great, that will, regardless of what you intellectually understand of what I'm saying, you'll be sucked into wanting to create a fantasy about your future while you think about, in imagination, the past and present without using monastic thought until after you've done the astral. And by the time you get through with all that astral stuff, your mental thought is totally based upon how you feel rather than what you should be thinking about. So that the concepts are gone, and basically the mental thought is used to back up and rationalize the astral. So you make up mental things that really don't make any sense when you really think about them. If someone were to back up what you desire in your astral body. This is crazy. Yeah, that's why we can look at our world and say, you know, this is a pretty crazy world. And the main reason has to do with karma, monastic thinking. If we stopped doing this, we would solve a whole bunch of problems very quickly. We would develop humility much more quickly. And egotism and arrogance would be broken through. They're the illusions in the mental body. And they're allowed to develop because of this karma manasa connection. We don't question our mental thought when we're controlled by how we feel. So you've got to overcome first the astral body's tendency to follow our desires, particularly our fixed desires or glamours. How do you overcome that? Well, we're going to get into that when we come back. We're going to take a break right now. And the reason we're taking a break now is, again, this is going to be a shorter show. This is only going till 5 minutes before the hour. So, but remember, next week we've got 2-hour shows from then on. So we had to do this for conflict reasons and scheduling, so we had to achieve this tonight. So, because we've got a show coming on after us, but don't worry about it. We're switching. Okay, so we'll be back in about 2 minutes and 30 seconds from right now.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower, MacFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. Why Life Is. I'm your host, Niles McFlower. I was just talking with Seth, our engineer, and he hopes that our show is going to really be good at 2 hours. He thinks that the show is one of the ones that will do well in 2 hours. We'll find out. So remember, we're going to have a two-hour show starting next week, an hour earlier than this show has traditionally started. And tonight we're going to have a short show because in the switchover we had some conflicts in scheduling and stuff. But next week, two-hour show, starting an hour earlier in whatever time zone you've been listening to. That's for the people who just tuned in. All right, so let me continue now with how do you deal with this problem that it's a pesky problem. Very few people have broken the connection called the Kama-Manasa connection in their mind. And the only people who have been successful at this, by the way, are people who are spiritually disciplined and at a fairly high level. You have to reach what is called the third level or monastic level of discipline. You don't have to finish the second level of initiation, but you have to have enough gumption and enough wherewithal to continue into the third initiation, at least doing this part of it, which is to quell the astral body and to succeed in it when you want to do truthful and wise mental thinking, which hopefully will be all the time, but whenever you do, you've got to be able to shut down those glamours in the astral body. So let's talk about those, because those fixed desires are nasty little things. Think of them as like bugs, and they itch you, and they constantly want you to know that they're there because they are the picture. Think of it as a picture, a non-moving picture at that, of a designer, and the picture keeps wanting to reinstitute itself with a feeling of wanting and a future sense or feeling of wouldn't it be wonderful if you could have that sort of, if you could call that a feeling, yes, I can. That's what you're left with from these fixed desires. They're fixed because they don't go away. They stay in the astral body, and every time energy is put out to try to meet the desire, whether successful or unsuccessful, the desire grows. Now here's the really rub. The more successful you are in meeting the desire, the more the desire grows. So unsuccessful attempts actually does not increase the desire as much as succeeding. So that doesn't give us much hope. So you can't get rid of these desires by every day feeding them. They just grow and grow and grow. then how are we to deal with them? Well, what the real story is here is a fixed desire is illusion. It's not seeing a way that we could have been loving and giving and helpful to others by using our empathy along with our super empathy of those two parts of our senses of God together. If we are empathic about how other people felt and then had some empathy of how we could give in ways to help them become more giving, which is the godly way, the soul way of expressing ourselves to them, then we would be able to eliminate the surrounding glamours that have replaced the love. So glamours replace real, not fake, love. Not hypocritical love, but real love. And love that has intrinsic in it the ability to help others to become more loving themselves, or else it isn't real love. It's some fake form of giving that we get something in return from, but it's hidden. So every time we have a fixed desire, there's a hidden, we'll call it wise loving, that we could have done and didn't do in an earlier time. And the way to get rid of the glamour, rid of it, not just smooth it over, feed it for a while so it feels better for a while and then comes back worse, but to get rid of it, is to find the love that got lost, the real love that could have helped someone else to become more loving themselves by whatever we could have given. And instead of reaching for the desire, reach and meet the needs of others by giving to them in ways that help them become more loving. Now, this is a general thing. I'm not talking about specifics here. But that's the answer for how to get rid of glamours. And if you don't know that answer, you're not going to understand, and you're not going to be able to use the rest of what I'm going to try to explain to you tonight. So how important is this? It's a big deal. Okay. So let's say that you are going to, quote-unquote, spiritually discipline yourself to be able to do this thing. What would you be doing on a daily basis? Well, let your desires do the walking for you. You've heard that. I'm using a pun. Let your fingers do the walking. Let your desires do the walking. As you sense a feeling of wanting, of whatever it is, I don't care if it's an ice cream cone or it's a new car or a pair of shoes, or it doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. Maybe it's sexual. Maybe it's wanting attention from others. Maybe it's wanting to feel important to others. Whatever it is, as soon as you feel the desire, that's a signal to you to, instead of trying to give in to the desire and do something that tries to make you feel better about that, or to try to deny it or repress it, those don't work, don't use them. Instead, say, okay, I have a desire. This is a great opportunity. That desire came about because I chose not to give to others in ways that help them to become giving. So now I need to find out how I can give in ways to help others to be giving that eliminates this particular desire. As soon as you think that, as soon as you think that, the desire will be substituted with some way to give. It'll be specific to you, and I can't tell you exactly what it will be. But it will come into your astral body, and you'll feel it if you try to allow yourself to. And then you should take action on it. But not until you have used your mental thinking, to think of the best way you can give to help others to become more giving. Because now you're becoming, instead of kama manasik, you're becoming manasik kama. You're using your astral body and emotions to now become loving by guiding it with your mental thought. And we're going to get to that in a minute, but that's the process you're going to be doing. So you're going to need to still be very feeling, better than you were before. You're going to still use your creative imagination, but in ways to help others. And you're going to see the ways to help others, which will create a sense of love in you by focusing on the fact that a desire you know to be an illusion. And behind the illusion, if you just allow yourself to, you will fairly quickly feel the way that you wanted to give that has always been sitting behind that desire. I know the answer is inside of us. See, it's not outside. You're not going to be able to read a self-help book and get anything out of it the answers to this. This only comes from inner reflection and using a center called the sacral center to help you to discover it. So this is going to be your beginning discipline. This is where you come from. Now let's continue with the mental discipline. There are some mental yogas that are strenuous and very difficult. Some that are nearly impossible for all but the greatest of spiritually disciplined people. Those I'm not going to talk about tonight. One of them is called synthetic yoga, which is a yoga that I and the group I'm a spiritual part of, we worked together and came up with this other yoga. But it's too difficult. And it's not for something to be just given out over the phone. I mean, over the, maybe the phone if you're listening in that way tonight, but over the radio. Tonight, let's talk about a simpler and more usable method in terms of monastic discipline. You remember I said that the whole dimension that you're attempting to understand in the monastic world is the dimension of what's called time itself. So the first thing you're going to become aware of in your thinking is, are you thinking in a whole concept that deals with the past, present, and future parts of time together? The future always includes the outcomes, not just for your own thought, but how the thought's going to affect others. That's critical. And it's predicated on what the past and present understandings are that you have about what you're thinking about. So the outcome has to match the past and present in the thought. If it doesn't, then you're going to have an incomplete thought that will be not helpful. And that's what I suggest you pay attention to. There are a lot of other kinds of, we'll say, ways to try to develop wisdom in thinking. Wisdom is wholeness in thought and balance in thought. And logic is important, but logic only deals with the thought forms. Logic means that you're choosing the right and correct thought forms in the correct order to describe what it is you're saying or thinking about. Logic is important, but it isn't the whole ballgame by any stretch. The more important thing is to have whole concepts. And having whole concepts, again, is having a good sense of what the past, present, and future are in terms of mental thinking and being able to balance them so that the past and present lead to each other in a reasonable way. And the outcome, as far as the future, helps others to think the same or better than you. It helps others to do that. If it doesn't do that, you are not practicing love wisdom. You are not creating whole mental thought. And you may not even be thinking very conceptually. Now, what are the clues for you when you're not doing this correctly? Well, if people are telling you that they don't understand what you're saying, or they're confused by your thinking, or they are misled by your thinking, then you immediately, it's a red flag. That should be like numero uno of stop. You're probably doing common monastic thinking. You're not doing complete mental thinking. And you have a big problem. That's it. So if you get that kind of feedback, or if people don't say anything, but either argumentative or walk away, or just to, then obviously your thought is having not a good effect on them. And you're not helping them to become better whole thinkers. Now, when you do the reverse, if you do the correct thing, if you do help people to conceptually understand, and you do develop whole thought, the result will be an immediate, we'll say, more inclusive response from those that you're speaking with, and one in which the return to you will be expressed in whole thought as well. It may not be as whole as your thought, but there'll be some improvement in the other person's thought, because that's the definition of what we're saying. And so you'll be able to sense it. If there isn't, if there's antagonism or emotionality, or there's no thought at all expressed, then you've made a mistake. And you need to now improve on it. You need to work on breaking the common monastic connection, which is undoubtedly holding you back and leading you into your fantasies and desires instead of into, and self-focus, obviously, high levels of self-focus, into being focused out mentally. Because that's what we're really dealing with. From a very high level of self-focus, which is common monastic thought, to a focused out position of being a soul and helping others to become better at their thinking, mental thinking, and helping them to become less emotional. Now, let's take it a step further. Let's say that you have understood everything I've explained so far in some rudimentary fashion. Of course, you can go back and listen to the show, because you may have to do that. Again, we are quite on time tonight, and I don't have enough time to go into enough examples, so you might remember it more easily. But what happens then if you attempt to do this, everything I said, and you do a really good job? Oh, we're getting somebody who wants to say something. So why don't we take that caller? Hello, caller? Hello? I think we lost the caller. I heard a click. Maybe they'll call back. At any rate, let me go on. Let's say that you have a situation where you've done everything you think you can to try to help somebody to be giving in their thought and producing more whole thought. They become more common monastically connected because of their own internal issues. They may have emotional problems. They may have all kinds of issues going on. What is the best way to deal with that kind of situation? Well, the first thing is to try to break your own connection, because it's going to stimulate you. Just as you're trying to help them become more mental, they're actually doing the reverse to you. So you have to be careful not to get caught in this, and lots of people do. It's not uncommon for it to happen. But as best as you possibly can, you need to try to get them to think more mentally. And the only way that you can achieve this is to not become emotional yourself. This takes tremendous efforts, and you're not going to be successful with some people. They're just going to stay astral no matter what, and you might just blow up and say, you're no good, Nick. I'm not going to talk to you anymore. Goodbye. Okay, you have that choice. But the point is that the better alternative is to try to distance yourself from the astral response and continue to think mentally, but no longer communicate with that person. And the reason I'm suggesting this is because if someone is adamant about staying astral and you try to bring them out of it, you'll eventually become emotional no matter how hard you can try to not, because ultimately, your desire is to change them if you keep trying. And then you get caught in your astral body from the desire to change them. And that's a bad problem. You can see what I'm saying. So you're better off, you're much better off, closing down the conversation and saying, I'm not going to talk about that any longer right now. Thank you very much. And say goodbye. Now, what happens if what you're trying to tell them is a life in that situation or some serious problem? Well, then I suggest a different form of communication, maybe write it down, or attempt to find some way, workaround, that doesn't get you into the position of having to desire for them to understand. It's very difficult, I know. These are the most difficult of circumstances in our relationships with other people. But remember, we have the ability to do this, and it is one that can really make a difference to us. Can we really change others? No. They have to change themselves. But we can offer to them thought coming from us that is not common monastic, that is whole mental thought, that does have love and wisdom in it, and helps them to do the same if they choose. If they choose not to, don't push it too far, because you'll get caught in your own astral issues then. And that's never a helpful solution to the situation. Well, we're running out of time for right now. So I do want to mention to you, if you haven't heard, we do have coming out next week sometime, the first of our pain formula, you'll call it, or I'll call it. But we have a new name. I know every week I have added a different name. But this is the real name now. This is actually, we got it patented or whatever, trademarked and the whole thing. It's called Vai Chi Jizik. That's what we're going to go. Phi Chi Jizik. Why? Because the science of Phi Chi is used to develop it, and it just makes sense. And the Chi in Phi Chi is spelled QI, the Chinese spelling. And the Phi is PHY, which stands for ways of dealing with pain. So it's phytogesic, in a sense. But it's Phi Chi Jizik, because we're using Chi as the fundamental science, although we're paying attention to plants as the healing source. So Phyto with Chi. And it's going to be a really terrific, a fantastic product, I can tell you that. I have yet to try. Nobody really has the whole formula completed. But I've had enough of it to say that it really works great. The reason we haven't had the whole formula is that the herbs are custom made. They're very special, and there's no replacement for them. You can't go out and buy them in some health food store or something. And so it's a difficult product to produce, but we're going to be able to do that. And you'll be able to get a trial size bottle. They're not very much. And try them out yourself, and I'll tell you more about that next week. But I did want you to know that it is available starting probably within a week. We'll have some available, and that's fantastic. And then we'll have a full production quantity available in probably 6-7 weeks or something like that. I don't know the exact period of time, but you could still get this pre-production batch. And it'll be just as good. It'll work just as well. And this formula is really going to be able to deal with a wide range of pains and at various levels, because you could take different amounts of it. And as you take more, it works more. So you can really control what you use and how it affects you. It's a great, great formula. I'm very excited about it. Phi Chi Jizik. Okay, we're out of time for right now, so I hope tonight's show has given you some basics about how to discipline ourselves so that we can deal with some of the issues of the astral nature that we have all inherited from our past. Kama Manasik, hopefully something that will only be in the history books in the not-too-distant future. Well, until next week, This has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.